Hey guys, it feels kind of funny coming back from behind the curtain. Thanks. Did you hear that? Somebody said I'm amazing. Hi guys. It's no Ben tonight. He's not even here, so what could we do without him? First thing I want to tell you is I have another announcement. I'm not pregnant. That would be a scary announcement, especially if Ben weren't here and I told you first and not him. That would be really funny. Yeah. And he heard it first when he listened to the, yeah, anyway. Okay, sorry. Sunday night from 6 to 8, which is April the 14th, Ben and I are going to be doing a Q&A session with you all on relationships. Okay, so this coming Sunday night from 6 to 8 at the Campus House, co-ed, boys and girls together, asking questions about relationships. So that is right here. So if you think of something you want to ask tonight as I'm talking, go ahead and send those. Those will go directly to Ben and I, and it'll be open for a day, like a day. So. Yeah, and not that if you come Sunday night and you have more questions, you can't ask them, but it'd be nice for Ben to have them ahead of time. I'm okay being spontaneous, but anyway. So, we've been in the book of Acts, right? I'm not doing that tonight. I'm taking a break from it. But for real, when Ben made plans of going through the book of Acts, we talked about a couple of times that it would be good for us to take a break and do a different topic. And so a few weeks ago, Cedric was here, right, talking about mental illness and answering some of your questions. And so tonight and Sunday night are another pause that we're taking in the book of Acts. So we're not even going to look at Acts tonight. And I'm going to talk about our relationships with each other, not just dating relationships. We're going to talk about relationships with each other, okay? So, phrases. I love phrases. Like, things your grandma said or your mom said, and then somehow you start saying it. You're like, where did that come from? Why am I saying that? Things like, more is caught than taught, right? Meaning that we do more of what we see than what we hear. Do as I say, not what I do. I learned it by watching you. What you see is what you get. And practice what you preach. Have you all heard most of those at some point, somewhere? Some old person said that to you probably, maybe me for the first time. My kids, we have six. In case you didn't know, I have a discipleship group that makes fun of me that I have six kids. Well, you have six kids? It's a funny joke. Anyway, that's not funny to you because you aren't in that meeting. But my kids are much more likely to act like me, right, than act like what I tell them to act like, right? I could say to them, handle fear this way, but if I'm in the corner trembling over something, they're not going to do what I'm talking about. They're going to do what they see. And that's that whole do as I say, not what I do. Our default is always going to be what you saw growing up. Even if you don't want it to be, it will be. So if there are things you know right now that your parents do that you don't want to do, man, start fighting hard, because that default is strong, y'all. It's strong. But in the same way, so as we do what we see, isn't that the way that the world is going to see the gospel the best, right? They're gonna see Jesus more by what we do than anything that comes out of our mouth, right? So I think, like, tonight I want to talk about how we treat each other, and how the world will see Jesus and see the gospel and see grace through that way more than anything we have to say. And some of us in this room need to shut up and start doing, right? Because you can say all these things, you can type out all these wonderful things on social media about Jesus, but then if your lifestyle is a total opposite of what you've been saying out loud, you've lost people completely. If you're fighting with your roommates, if you are gossiping about people behind their back, I mean, list can go on and on and on, the things that ruin relationships with people. If that's how you're living your life, your witness for Jesus is lost on people. They are watching you closely, whether we want them to or not. The world is watching us. You would never, I hope, listen to a teacher or a speaker who would preach the word but then live the opposite of what they're preaching. If you're ever at a church and that you figure that out, please stop going to that church. not that your pastor's perfect, but man, you want somebody teaching you through the word who is living what they are teaching. And that goes for my kids. I have to practice what I preach. And that goes for me to you also, right? Because I have a lot of conversations with a lot of you. And if I'm not doing what I'm telling you to do, then who cares what I have to say? So I have to be in check with that. So one of the things that I love about our God the most is that he knew we needed each other, right? God has never one time asked us to do life alone. He gave Eve to Adam in the very beginning because he knew that Adam, it would not be good for Adam to be alone. He needed somebody to do life with. God made us for relationship. This isn't a weakness on our part. He made us to do this life together, to sharpen each other and to challenge each other and to encourage each other and to do it well. The process of sanctification, big word, I'm proud of myself that I know the meaning of a big word, but that is the process of setting apart, right? Becoming holy, becoming more like Jesus. And it's a process that lasts your whole life. That sanctification process continues throughout your life. And I would say that the most sanctifying relationship you will ever have is your marriage. Because that is the relationship that points out the most selfishness that you have that you didn't know. Y'all think you're selfish now, just wait. There's more to come out in you, but in a healthy marriage, that's what God's using it for. It's more about making you holy than it is making you happy. That's God's plan. That's God's purpose. He knew we need each other. He also knew it would be hard to get along and like each other. And I'm going to attempt to be fancy. There's scripture all over the place that are giving us warnings and encouragement about how to treat each other. And here are just a few. Down, Michelle, right? Hold on. Okay, Romans 12:10. Sorry, I asked for your applause. Romans 12:10, love each other with genuine affection and take delight in honoring each other. I love the end of that, in honoring each other. So not talking poorly about each other, but lifting each other up and always honoring one another. Philippians should be 2:3. For he risked his life for the work of Christ, and he was at the point of death while doing for me what you couldn't do from far away, which probably, Michelle, that's probably Proverbs 2:30. So let's read it off of my paper. Proverbs 2:3 says, don't be selfish. Don't try to impress others. Be humble. Thinking of others is better than yourselves. Don't look out only for your own interests, but take an interest in others too. This is one of my favorites, Proverbs 27:17, and we've heard this a lot, right? As iron sharpens iron, so a friend sharpens a friend. Galatians 6:2, share each other's burdens, and in this way obey the law of Christ. There's a question that you hear asked, how will people know that we are Christians, right? How will they know? They won't know it by our speech. They'll know it by our love. They'll know it by how we treat each other. And in John 13, verses 34 and 35, says, a new commandment I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. All men will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. I went to 1 Corinthians Chapter 13 is all about love, right? You hear it at weddings, love is patient, love is kind. And I didn't want to just read it like that, so I went to find a rephrase or a paraphrase or a poetic way to say this chapter. And I found this on crosswalk.com in their devotionals, but I wanted to read this to you. How will they know? This is in the answer to the question. How will they know we are Christians? Well, they will know us by our patience. They will know that we are Christians by our contentment, by our modesty, and our humility. They will recognize us, for we will not be rude. We will seek the best for others. We will be difficult to make angry and refuse to keep count of how many times we've been hurt. They will know us because evil makes us sad and truth makes us happy. They will know us because we protect the defenseless and we do not live in suspicion of others. They will know us by our hope, and they will know us by our perseverance. And do we mess this up all the time? Yeah, we do. There are three relationships that most of you, two that all of you will have in your lifetime, and those are family relationships. Everybody has a mom and a dad, right? Your friendships, and then a marriage, dating and a marriage relationship. I'm going to invite three friends out here to come and talk about some of these. So if you'll welcome Haley Troop, Katie Lichtenberger, and Phil Lopez to the stage. It's okay. So I'm going to ask them a couple of questions, and they knew this ahead of time, so they're prepped for what I'm going to have them talk about. But Haley is going to talk tonight a little bit about family relationships and how that relates to God's love for her. Then we're going to move on to Katie. She's going to talk to us about her friendship relationships. And then Phil is going to talk to us about dating and marriage relationships. Okay. So, Haley, first question, when you were growing up, how did your family shape and influence your understanding of God?
I think, first of all, it's going to be hard for all three of us to be able to condense what we're sharing and to be able to, like, it's really hard to not be able to communicate the depth and the length of time that a lot of this pain was over. But for me, I come from a family where I have been through two divorces. My mom's been divorced twice, and both times because my dad in the relationship chose other things over me or over our family. And so one of those situations was drugs and alcohol, and the other one was I came home one day, and dad never came home. And then the next day, dad never came home, and dad never came home. I never really had answers to that whenever I was younger. And then those realities kind of helped shape and reinforce the beliefs that I had, that God was distant, that he was annoyed by the depth and magnitude of my many, 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 many emotions, and was ready to leave me behind at any moment. So I worked really hard to be obedient, to please. I tried to suppress my fears and my emotions, which is hard for some of you guys to believe about me now, but and I prayed every single night that God would forgive me, but also that he would come into my heart. I mean, every night. And then I would ask for forgiveness when I would realize there were days that I forgot to ask him for that. But yeah, distant and annoyed with me and ready to leave me at any moment were things that kind of plagued my life.
Hey, Katie, friendships haven't always come easy to you. Can you talk about your own struggle with codependence and insecurity as it relates to your friendships?
Yeah, definitely. So let me just start off by saying that those of you in the room who know me really well know that people and my relationships with people are super important to me. When I was a student at ISU, I was a comm major, so I literally have a degree in building relationships with people. Like, that's how important this is to me. And basically my greatest desire in this life, I think what I've wanted, what I want most in this world is to love others well and to be loved by others super well. And so it's just like kind of hard to believe that friendships haven't been super easy for me. They've actually been really hard. I didn't have friends, like any friends, until I was in fourth or fifth grade. And one of the first couple of friendships that I had weren't great. One girl who said she was my friend was not my friend. She's actually really mean to me, like, all the time. Just really awful to me. And then another girl, I asked her every single day for a year if I could sit by her on the bus and be her friend, and she told me no every single day for an entire year until she finally gave in at the end of the year and was like, fine. And that's how we became friends. So that was like my base of starting friendships. And it's just really weird because I feel like I get along with everybody that I come in contact with really well. But I just never had like a deeper connection or a deeper friendship until I was about in eighth grade, my freshman year of high school, and I became friends with this girl, and I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is great, like, talk about a best friend for life. Like, we were so close, and I realized that the more and more that this friendship went on, actually, the more and more unhealthy it was. So after we had established our friendship, I learned very quickly that I wasn't allowed to have other friends, and to a point where I was scared that people who were my friends in my life, I would not put the label friend on them, or I would not post about them on social media or call them anything remotely further than an acquaintance, because that would lead into a really hard, aggressive discussion with my friend about how I didn't care about the friendship, that I didn't care about her as much. And yeah, that just really sucked. It was very guilt-tripping and just not healthy. But she could have friends, and a lot of the time I would find myself being replaced by multiple people for certain periods of time, whoever was just like the most interesting to my friend at the time. And then I would just like be waiting on the back burner, just like living for the day where like I was able to be like her close friend again. And I would just feel awful like that entire time where like she would have another friend before me. And then as soon as it got to the point where I was like back in it with her, like I was like, it's fine, like we're good, we're totally fine. And we weren't, obviously. So I found myself putting a lot of time and energy into that friendship and getting none of it reciprocated. And I thought that that was my fault, that I wasn't trying hard enough, that I wasn't doing enough. And that just really led me into having behaviors, really unhealthy behaviors, that started reflecting in more than just this friendship. And it seems like basically for my whole life, I've just been repeating all these different lies to myself of like, you're not enough, but you need to calm down because you're too much and you're not trying hard enough. And if you don't try hard enough, then you're failing. And if you fail, then what's the point? Like, all of your friendships are over. You're not worthy of love from other people, from God, from your family. And if you're not doing anything to earn that love, then what's even your purpose of being here?
Phil, you've said that you were an entirely different person in high school. Tell us about high school, Phil, especially in your dating relationships.
Ooh-wee. I remember the first time it was brought to my attention that people liked me, that they wanted to be my friends, and that girls wanted to date me. Super oblivious before that. But I took that and I ran with it. And what quickly was an innocent maybe attempt to be liked and to be accepted quickly spiraled into a whirlwind of deceit and lies and manipulation. And it was especially easy with girls. I mean, you, half of y'all in here are girls, and so you know the terrors of 14, 15, 16-year-old life, right? And, yeah, it's not fun. But it was easy. It was easy for me, and I had no pushback ever. And what I quickly realized was that I thought in my head that if I was ahead of the game, that if I was the one that was making the calls, if I was the one that was setting the rules and setting the boundaries and setting the definition and setting the titles of dating or not dating or whatever, then I would be in control of the relationship and I got to make the calls of whether or not we're together or not together or friends. You know, to the point of if I would get a whisper of maybe the girl I was dating not liking me again, I would dump her 20 minutes later and within that night be on to the next girl. And that was the reality. I was with a girl from the age of 13 to 18. There was always a girl I was dating. There was always a girl I was talking to or messing around with or whatever. And what that did is that cheapened it. It cheapened what God intended for something good. And it cheapened it to a situation that I can manipulate, that I could lie, that I could cheat my way through. And I became those things. I became a liar. I became a manipulator. I became a cheat. And the areas of dating and girls made it easy to do that.
turning the corner, right? We're going to talk about God and talk about how these things that you have just talked about have affected your view of God, and then when God came into your life, how that's changed for you. So, Haley, in talking about your family, how has your understanding of God changed your current family? And this question is, you know what I'm asking you. Go ahead.
I already have an answer for it, so it's fine. You can change if you want, but it's the same answer.
Go ahead.
This is actually one of, my favorite story to tell, and I already have tears in my eyes about it, because God has released so much of those beliefs that I had about him over the years. I'm still tempted by them. Those three things that I mentioned of God being distant, annoyed with my emotions, and actually not so much the "will leave me," not that part. That's more about other people. But still kind of, it feels like they're right behind me, ready to tap my shoulder. But through counseling, I was even able to put words to what I've told you guys tonight. That was a huge, huge part of it, of being able to go back and think through those situations and how they actually affected me, but also through honest conversations with my mom to kind of have a better picture of what actually happened. And my dad that I talked about, who just never came home, one day we just were able to pick up a relationship again, and so much I've learned about how, like, we talk about in the Bible, it talks about adoption and how God adopts us through his son Jesus. And I've been able to see how God can choose to love us even if, like, we aren't like what we see as his family. And my dad has done that for me. He didn't have to love me at all, but he does. And I call him dad even though he wasn't my birth dad. He's my dad. That's amazing. But how it shapes my family now, God has used my husband, Josh. We have gone through some really, really hard trials in our first years of marriage. I think we naively thought that that would come later in marriage, but it came a year one. Here we go. Huge, huge, huge pain that I was walking through. And in that year, I got to see how Josh was not intimidated or annoyed by my larger-than-life emotions and my depths of despair, that he chose to be with me. And I know for a fact, you guys, there's not a doubt in my mind, my husband will always come home to me at the end of the day. If I come home last, my husband will be there. And that's amazing to me, because that's something I genuinely thought in eighth grade, that I would be divorced. Like, that was something I just thought would happen. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, I get to watch my husband look at my daughter the way that I always wanted to be looked at by my dad or dads. And I get to see the way that she looks at him and the trust that she has for that man. She loves men. If you've met my daughter and you're a man, she warms up to you right away. And that is amazing for me, that she gets to have that security and comfort around men. But also that I get to watch God love her through my husband, and I get to feel that love from him that I felt like I was missing as a young child. I hope that made sense. Mm-hmm. But I'm just, overall, I've learned that God is not distant. He will absolutely never leave me, no matter how big my emotions are or how deep in despair I feel. He's picked me, and he loves me, and we're together. We're stuck, so.
Katie, how has knowing God's love changed the way you view yourself and your friendships now?
Oh, man. First off, it's just been super cool to see how God has been planting these different seeds of changing my definition of friendships from the second that I moved here to Bloomington Normal to go to ISU, and even like well before that, just because for the first time in my life, I experienced a community of people who were pursuing Jesus in everything that they did. And so I'm like meeting all these new people, because I'm going through this new season, this new transition in life where I moved out of my parents' house, I'm in an apartment, I'm in college, and then I'm like meeting all these different people, and they're all from this community where we just love each other so, so well. And they just started slowly like transforming how I view friendships, with the way that they were treating me, the way that they were talking to me, the way that they were talking about other friendships that they had. And I was like, oh shoot, like, I'm messed up. this is bad, the stuff that's happening. And just through those interactions, I started to see in my past friendships, like, where there were unhealthy things, and then getting to experience healthy things for the first time. And just everything that I knew about friendships before was not from the Lord at all. It was just lies that I had constructed in my own head through really awful experiences with other people. And I had to erase all of that, and I had to just start over completely with all these different people. The friendship that I had had before with that girl, October a couple years ago, this is the first time I'd ever done this before in my life, but I decided to walk away from that friendship, which was so hard and devastating for me, because I had never, just the thought of giving up on a person, to me, was, I couldn't even imagine it. And I then realized afterwards, after it had happened, after emotions had passed, that it was not me giving up on her, it was me walking away into a healthier place for myself, and even for her, because just what we had was not healthy whatsoever. I learned a lot about how I was putting a lot of expectations on myself and on the people around me, and how I was setting up people that I love deeply to fail and to disappoint every single time, because I was asking them to do things that only Jesus can do in my life. And I also learned that boundaries are super great in friendships, and that they actually do the opposite of what you think that they would do. Like, you're like, oh, like, stay away from someone. Like, what do you mean? And it actually grows you closer, because it gives you space to grow individually than when you can come back together and talk about how you've grown individually, and then you can grow together. And that's been huge for me, particularly in friendships that I had had before I came here and made new friendships, and just the way that I've been able to grow in those, and how healthy that they've become, and so much better than I ever thought that they could be. And I'm not gonna lie to you guys, it's really hard for me still. I struggle with this every single day, because I've had over 15 years worth of lies circling in my head about friendships, and I've only for the past 2.5 years been able to combat those with practicing healthy habits with different people, spending consistent time in the Word and in prayer, and having out loud conversations with God about these things. I'm a verbal processor, so out loud conversations are important for me. And that's the only way that God has been able to teach me how to be healthy, and that I am so worthy of love, not only by Him, but the people around me, just because I exist and just because I'm me.
Phil, how did you experience God's grace, and how has that changed your relationship with Katie and Ella now?
Oh, man, in amazing, amazing, amazing ways. Y'all, you cannot be radically changed without that Spirit. Like, it's just not, it's not a thing. And I'm going to be honest, when you are foolish, there are consequences. Always. That doesn't mean that God doesn't redeem them, because God has redeemed everything in my life in incredible ways. But there's consequences for the foolishness that I walked in when I was younger. And a lot of that was, Katie and I had to wade through that early on in our relationship, of a lot of pain, questioning, down to the fact of me being a virgin, or her being a virgin and I wasn't. Like, it was really, really hard for us to face. And the beautiful thing about that is that God meets us there. In that pain and in that struggle, God meets us there. But that is a result. That is a consequence of the foolishness that I walked in. And so the beautiful thing is that what I learned, and what Katie's teaching me every day, is that I don't have to manipulate. I don't have to manipulate my relationship with the Lord, because no matter what I do, no matter how much I try to make it perfect, no matter how much I try to be the guy on top, to be the one making the calls, to be the one to have things happen in my timeline, in my guideline, in my rules, that he's the same. He's consistent, and he loves me the same no matter what. And Katie pushes me towards that every single day. She reminds me that I don't have to manipulate my relationship with her, because she's gonna choose to love me. And with my daughter, she's the love of my life. I wake up every morning, and she reminds me that the heart of the Lord is worth chasing after. That it is worth fighting every single urge that I have to be selfish, every single urge that I have to manipulate the life around me. It's worth to fight that, and it's worth to give that to the Lord. Because I want her to know love that's pure. I want her to know that her father loves her. I want her to be kind. I want her to never meet a person like me in my life. But I see all of those things as gifts from the Lord. That I can do anything to earn that. I couldn't do anything. I couldn't manipulate. I couldn't lie or pretend that I'm perfect for him to give me a gift like my wife and my daughter. And that's why he's so good.
Thanks, guys. Hey, well, Phil didn't know where I was going next, but he perfectly segued me into talking about the gospel, which he just very eloquently shared through his story. I'm just going to stay on the stool because I kind of like it. I might get down, though, and get excited here in a second, so just watch out. So the gospel, what is the gospel? Gospel is, simply put, God sent his son Jesus to die for us, right? So that we would not have to suffer the consequences of our sin, that we could go to heaven to be with him. We don't have to pay the ultimate sacrifice, right? Jesus paid that for us, so that we can experience the grace and the mercy and the love and the forgiveness that these guys talked about. And you also heard in all three of them, it doesn't mean life is easy now. It doesn't mean things are perfect. It doesn't mean those lies don't still exist and that junk doesn't still exist, because it does. Because life is life, and the choices we make follow us around. But God's grace covers all of that. The world, you guys, needs to see that grace. They need to see that living a life that Jesus has called us to works. And that's up to you, and that's up to me. That the world sees that a life that Jesus calls us to works, and that grace works, right? And that starts with how we treat each other. If we aren't treating each other with that grace and respect and love and forgiveness, the world isn't going to see that the life Jesus calls us to works. They won't see that. The world needs to see that we have a means for healing, that we have a God we can go to for healing, whether that's emotional, spiritual, physical healing. They need to see that we don't carry bitterness and unforgiveness around. For some of you, that's really difficult. Others of us, not so much. But we all carry our own things around with us. But if bitterness and unforgiveness is something that's hard for you, start asking questions and start digging deep and working on that now. These are things, don't wait. Don't wait to work on the things you know you have to work on. This is your time to do that. The world needs to see that we don't carry broken relationships around with us. Okay, and that doesn't mean that whatever's been done to us has to be fixed. That means we have to be fixed, and we have to experience the grace, and we have to extend the grace, whether that's given back to us or not, from the relationship that's broken. Our side of it needs to be fixed and not be broken anymore, and we can do that. The world needs to see that we don't have relationships that are divisive. And I have to tell you that in all my years of living, just a few of them, I've been in a few churches in my lifetime growing up. I grew up in the church, so I've been in several churches up until this point in my life. And I can tell you from personal experience, the way that Satan wants to attack the most is by dividing his people. He wants us to be divisive with each other. He wants us to fight with each other, because then the world can say, you aren't any better than me. And they can laugh at that, and they can say that we don't even believe what we say we believe, that the word isn't even true, because look at those Christians not even loving each other. And I know you guys see this on social media. If a big Christian leader falls, right? And that seems to be happening more and more lately, that all of a sudden, boom, they did this big sin and they've fallen. And I'm not, I don't mean to make light of it, make fun of it, it seems like I am, but I'm not. But what is so disheartening about that are all of the believers that come out attacking that. That is not the gospel. That is not what Jesus calls us to. That person will be held accountable for what they did, but we as believers are called to love them and love them back into the grace and forgiveness of Jesus, right? Not jump on this bandwagon of, oh my gosh, they, I can't even, I will never listen to that person again. I will never read their, I won't. Relax, relax. God's ways, you guys, God's ways are true. They're right, they're beautiful, they're good. And people in this world are longing for the intimacy, the wholeness, and the hope that we hold on to. Show them. Stop talking about it and show them. But before we can do that, like these guys talked about, we have to figure out how to accept God's love for ourselves, and we have to understand what that means. And I think we have a difficult time with that. There's a podcast I've been listening to. Her name's Havilah Cunnington, and one of the things she's been talking about in the last couple ones that I've listened to, I've really been stewing over it and thinking about it in my own life, but she talks about how we all have a habitual narrative that we default to. We talked in the beginning about how we default to what we see in our parents, but we also all have that story we play in our head that we fall back on, right? As soon as something goes wrong in your day, you've got that, oh man, I'm not good enough again, I'm not this, I'm not that, or I am this, or I am that, and there those narratives are almost always rooted in some form of rejection or abandonment in some form. And that can take a lot of forms, but it's usually rooted in some of that, that God is no longer with me because I'm not believing his love for me. Because if you were believing his love for you, those that narrative would not be playing in your head anymore. When I allow that to play in me, mine is, there are many, I got lots, but I'm not worth your time. That's one that I play in my head, that I fight hard for friendships, and when I get them, then I kind of take a step back and make, I'm probably not really a friend that's worth your time, so never mind. You don't have to be my friend. It's okay. And then I will go to the I'm too much for people. I'm kind of loud sometimes, and I can be too much, and I can be annoying. That was my next one. I'm annoying. Or I'm not enough, or I'm not good enough. Like, I feel like those are opposite things, but they're very much the same for me, that I can't measure up. I can't raise 6 kids. Man, you guys, it's hard, and I talk to God about that all the time. I'm like, what the heck were you thinking? Giving me 6 kids? I have no organizational ability whatsoever in my life. Do you know how many doctor's appointments my children have not gone to because I don't remember, and it's in my phone, and on the big calendar on my wall, and, oh, that's okay. God gave me 6 kids anyway. That's a narrative I play. Or that because there are a lot of us, that our family is too much for people sometimes, and I don't know that I recognize that until there are people in our house, and I realize, wow, our chaos is a lot. And so then I start listening to those lies of how I'm not a good parent to keep the chaos calm because I should do that for other people to make other people feel comfortable. That's a lie. We are who we are, right? My kids are who they are, and they're kids. Kids aren't quiet, right? Kids aren't supposed to act like adults. And so I find myself wanting to make them act like adults when other people are around because of that narrative I play in my head. You guys, the enemy wants to use rejection and abandonment to shut us up, to get us to stop even showing the love of Jesus to this world. He wants us to give up on God's love. He wants to tell us that it's not real, that it's not something we're capable of or we're good enough for. He wants us to give up on ourselves, and he wants us to give up on each other. And then he wins if we give up on those things. But I also want to say, like, I need to throw this in there as a little side note, that I do think that sometimes we expect each other to be Jesus. Have you ever had a friendship that you've expected way too much of that person, or had a friend that's expected way too much of you? Like, whoa, I cannot be your Jesus. And so I have to say that as a side note, is that we have to remember that too, that only Jesus is Jesus. We are people, and we will fail each other, and we will mess up, but that's where grace and forgiveness comes in, and we don't write off friendships just because we mess up. We talk about it, we figure it out, and if you can come out on the other side of conflict, the level of intimacy goes one layer deep. More conflict, you go another layer deep. Conflict does not mean bad. Not always. Sometimes it means bad. Sometimes you gotta walk away from friendships, and that's another sermon, maybe next year. But that, you know, there is, we have to have grace for each other. We can't, and as soon as somebody hurts your feelings, well, can't be your friend anymore. You hit a nerve. That's not what God calls us to. And we're all messed up, right? Yes, Joe, we are. We're all messed up. But we have to position ourselves differently for what happens on the inside of us. Because what happens, what we hear play on the inside of us is what plays out and what we show the world. So one of the things also in this podcast that she talks about, which I want to start doing because I think is probably something she learned in counseling because it sounds very counselor-ish. But, you know, you have those days where you wake up having a pretty good day and feeling like, man, it's going to be a good day. But somehow you're going to bed feeling defeated and feeling like the worst person on the face of the planet, right? Everybody has those days. You're like, man, now I'm in a bad mood. I don't even know what happened. I wasn't such a good, what happened? But she talks about tracing that back. Like, go back to, okay, I woke up. Things were good. Took a shower. Still good. Still feeling good. But to find that moment, whether it was, you got a bad grade in class, and so immediately those messages start playing in your head again, and that's where your peace left you, or somebody said something, or whatever that is, to trace that back and then get to the root of whatever is there. Because it isn't that thing, right? It wasn't the bad grade. It's going deeper. It's going deeper to something that you're playing in your head. So to find that and fix it. We cannot let the enemy rob us of this, you guys. God has a purpose for us, and it's going to be a constant spiritual battle. The enemy is not going to stop trying to rob you and trying to tell you that God doesn't love you. But the good news is he does not have authority in your life, right? Satan does not have authority, and we, the scripture tells us that we have been given the power of the resurrection to say, Satan, heck no, get out. Get out of my head, get out of my heart, get out of my life. You don't have space here. I'm not giving you space here. And I'm going to replace that with what I know is true. And if that's something you struggle with, find a friend that you can text and say, hey, I can't get out of my head. Let them speak truth over you, speak truth to you. That's what we do for each other. Quote from this Havilah Cunnington I've been talking about. I love this. She says, the truth of God's love for us is this. That you have been wanted from the moment you were created. You have a place at his table. He wants you to come and sit with him. And you, I love this part, you are so necessary to his plan on this earth. He wanted you from the moment you were created, and you are so necessary to his plan on this earth. Every single one of you, every single one of you are necessary. College years, guys, is a time where you have a constant influx of new relationships, right? Next fall, going to be a totally different conversation. So, congregation, let's try that again. And so you're going to have a whole set of new friends, and you're going to have new classes and new people to meet. There's just a constant influx of relationship. Your influence for the Lord is strongest right now. And where you're at, because you will never have another time in your life that you will meet as many new people as you do right now. So I'm going to talk about my kids for just a little bit. I think people for a long time warned me about teenagers. Just wait till they're teens. Just wait till they're teens. People say stupid things to you when you're a parent. You don't have to listen to anybody else's parenting advice. That's my parenting advice to you. You don't have to listen. But I have three teenage boys now, but I have loved having teen boys. I love seeing that relationship turn from having to be a constant parent to becoming more of a peer especially with the Elijah and Levi, who are 17 and 18. And there just aren't those parenting moments as much anymore as it is a guiding or a let me give you some piece of advice and wisdom for life. It isn't correction. And it's so beautiful and fun to watch them make choices that are good, but also beautiful and not fun is a wrong word, but beautiful to be able to see them make wrong choices but still be in a place that I hope our home is a safe place to fall and a safe place to fail and a safe place to pick up and do better next time. I will have a college student next year. What the heck? I don't know how to do that. I know how to hang. I don't know how to have one in my house, so we'll see how this goes. But Elijah is here, and he drums sometimes. I'm going to embarrass them for just a little bit, okay? Him and his girlfriend, Savannah, okay? I told him I was going to cry, so I probably will. But I have prayed for my boys and who God would bring into their life, both friendships and female relationships. And we've always talked about dating in high school not being a wise thing for all the things Phil talked about. Yeah, not wise, but always hands wide open, right? Because God might have something different, and if the right girl comes, then we talk about that again. Well, Savannah comes along, and this is right before their senior year of high school, and Savannah originally said, I'm not dating in high school, and I told Elijah, I said, well, you're not either, so that's good, right? And Savannah's parents are up there, so I'm telling our story, guys. But things quickly turned, and they kept talking and kept getting to be closer friends. And it came. And the reason I'm talking to you about this is because I'm really proud of them. Okay, I'm really proud of the way they've sought the Lord in the beginning of their relationship, because Savannah had made that decision. She didn't take it lightly, but then thought, okay, maybe God's telling me something else. And I know she went to her dad, and I know she went to her friends, and I know Elijah came to me and said, is this wise? We've both decided this is something we want to do. Is this wise? Is this okay? What teenagers come to their parents and say, do you think this is a good idea? I didn't know that was a thing. So I'm just really proud of them. I'm proud of who they are. I'm proud of what I'm learning about God's love for me and God's love for them and the way that they are handling their relationship. They're not perfect, and we don't want them to be, right? I mean, we want them to be, but we don't expect them to be. There's the word. We don't expect them to be. But I love that. I know Savannah, I know the Karches are involved, and he's been investing in Elijah. Jim has been investing in Elijah for a long time. I've known Savannah for a long time. So it just couldn't be more beautiful and couldn't be more right. And I'm so grateful that God has shown that. And I'm telling you all that because I've asked Savannah to lead us in this closing song. And it's one of my very favorite songs, Pieces. I'm asking her to lead it because every time she sings it, I cry. Because I love the song, but I love the way this girl sings it. And she's special to me. And you guys, even if this relationship doesn't last and it's not a forever thing, it hasn't been a waste. Because I've watched her sharpen him and him sharpen her, and I've watched them change each other for the better. And that is the gospel. And that is how God wants us to use our relationships with each other. And so it's been so cool to watch that in my kids. And I want her to share this song with you. So